Welcome to Charge Forward Coaching, the podcast for committed athletes who want to achieve more on and off the field. Hosted by James Blasco, certified mental toughness and resilience coach. You'll gain insights and inspiration from elite athletes, coaches, and others who know what it takes to excel. Are you ready to take your game to the next level? Then tune in, get inspired, and let's charge forward. Now here's your host, James Blasco.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Charge Forward Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, James Blasco, and today we are thrilled to have Matt Seneca, the head coach of Easton High School football, one of the winningest programs in the powerhouse football state of Pennsylvania. Matt's journey from a high school standout and a starting quarterback at Penn State under Joe Paterno, and then on to a successful high school coaching career is truly inspiring. He'll be diving into his playing and coaching experiences, as well as the Easton versus Peaburg traditional Thanksgiving Day rivalry, which dates back to 1899, one of the oldest in the nation. We'll also tackle the role of mental toughness and how athletes can create the right mindset to help them achieve their goals. So get ready for an insightful conversation packed with great stories and insights with Coach Seneca. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't we just start by you giving us a little bit of a background on your career in football up to this point.
So it's weird. I have a father who played Division I football at NC State. Lou Holtz was his head coach. So I grew up in a football household. My dad's always been a coach. I grew up in a locker room. Always wanted to play football, was never allowed to play football. So my dad didn't like the youth leagues and how they were being taught and that kind of stuff. So he kind of made me play soccer until I was in seventh grade. And then seventh grade was the first year I actually was allowed to play football. So started in seventh grade, ended up starting 3 years in high school, as a quarterback and strong safety, was an all-state strong safety, got a scholarship to Penn State, Coach Paterno, and went there to, play my 4 years, graduated in 2001. I guess the thing I'm most famous for there is I got my first start against the 2001 University of Miami team. So I just saw a stat the other day about them, that if their offense wouldn't have scored any touchdowns all year, they would have finished with an 8-4 record. So that was the defense I got to go That's against my first start. Yeah. So I graduated from Penn State and then I got right into high school coaching. My dad was the athletic director at a high school in Eastern Pennsylvania, Liberty High School. And the head coach there played for my dad when he was, you know, growing up and stuff. So I knew him and he gave me a start as a quarterback coach. And then that grew into offensive coordinator. And I've been to a couple different places as far as being an assistant and that kind of stuff. And then, I took my first head coaching job in 2013, at Wilson Area High School. I was there for 2 years, knew it wasn't the right place, left to be an offensive coordinator again. Did that for 3 more years and then took my next head coaching job at Whitehall High School. Was there for 4 years. We won 2 district titles. Was coach of the year 1 year there. And then that was like a commute for me. So I was driving a lot to and from practice. So I was missing a lot of home. So I resigned from there to spend more time with my family. And a month after I did that, there was an opening at Easton High School, which is 2 minutes from my house. And if you're from Eastern Pennsylvania, you're from the Lehigh Valley where I live, Easton football speaks for itself and the tradition and the history, that it has there. I think they've only had six coaches in their entire being in existence. So it's a pretty special place to be. I knew that growing up in the area. And I kind of always said that if I ever got the opportunity, I would apply for it. And being as it's not a job that opens very often. And I had to have a serious conversation with my wife, and being this close to home and my kid going to school in the district and everything, and, you know, was a big factor. So, put my name in and here I am.
Yeah, I know the folks in Easton, myself included, are glad that you got that role. Congratulations. So was coaching in the back of your mind while you were a player, or is this something that just grew upon you? Maybe somebody influenced you to get into coaching?
Well, I mean, I had a lot of influences. I mean, like I said, I start with my dad, just being around him as a coach and him coaching me and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I've kind of always wanted to get into sports in some way, whether it was, you know, being a professional player or whether it was coaching. I can't see myself not being involved with the game. I think it would drive me nuts. Like, I don't know what I'd do on a Friday night in the fall. So, and I think my wife understands that too. But, you know, besides my dad, my high school coach, Jim Morgans, at Allentown Central Catholic, was a huge influence on me in the way he treated his players and he treated us and how he coached us and things like that. So those are probably the two biggest influences. And then the guys I got to coach with, Tim Montzman, Jeff Puckson, Harold Fairclough, you know, guys like that, that I got a chance to learn from and learn how to be a head coach and, you know, do some things different and be able to take those things with me. It's probably the biggest thing.
So I know a lot of us, myself included, would love and often fantasize to be about being a quarterback at Penn State and having that opportunity. What was that experience like? I mean, that's one of the top schools in all of college football, yet playing for one of the greatest coaches of all time. How was that experience? What did you learn from that?
I learned how to deal with adversity. you know, it is – you know, I hear that from a lot of people, like, man, it must have been cool. It must have been awesome. And there's no denying that it is. I mean, you run out in front of 110,000 people and, you know, get to experience that kind of thing. And, you know, the perks of just being a Penn State football player, you know, you can't deny those things. And I did love my time at Penn State. My career was just very up and down. You know, from the aspect of having success or whatever it might have been. So that was tough for me to deal with. It was tough for me to deal with criticism for the first time, pretty much in my athletic career. But I learned a lot of life lessons. I learned a lot of things that made me a better person, made me kind of who I am today, kind of how I think today. So I definitely don't regret my time there. It wasn't the easiest 4 years of my life, but I also wouldn't change any of it either.
Yeah, it seems like nowadays, especially college football, has changed so dramatically in so many different ways. But I also look at high school football. From the time I played, I don't want to date myself here. We didn't quite have leather helmets, but it was pretty darn close. How different is it from like what you recall playing? You've been coached for many, many years. How different is it? How different are the athletes that you're coaching?
Yeah, I mean, athletes are athletes, I think. But I think the thing that's really changed the most is how year-round you have to be with your program. Like, we played our Thanksgiving Day on November 28th, and I give the kids off in December, and then we're right back at it the beginning of January, you know, in the weight room and doing all that stuff, and it's all the way through till we start in August. And I think that's the biggest thing that's changed is the commitment level that's needed to be successful today, especially with, you know, college recruiting in the way it is now and how good you have to be to actually get a look from a college over a transfer portal kid and somebody that's already proven themselves at the college level. And, you know, that's another deck that kids these days are up against that I never had to worry about. The other thing is the social media that I never had to deal with, thank God. Yeah. I can't imagine what college would have been like if social media was around. I think it's, you know, football's football. It doesn't change. Crap is crap. Power's power. And a slant's a slant. Like,
yep.
You know, lifting's lifting. A bench press is a bench press. I think it's all the outside factors now that kids have to deal with. That just kind of make it a little more difficult on today's athlete.
So as a coach, what type of maybe routines or programs do you put in place to help the kids not only you know, commit themselves to this year-long process, but deal with the mental side of it. I mean, that's one of the things that I have a passion for, is learning about, educating myself, and talking to others about mental toughness and things like that. How does that work with high school kids? How do you get them to stay in the game year-round?
I think it's a commitment from them to want to be good. It's you having a relationship with them first and foremost, to be able to tell them things and have them trust you and say, this is what we need to do to be successful. You know, if they buy into that, like this past season was my second season, and my first season we were 3-8. And then, after that season, we made a change, and I wanted to find out who was really committed to the program and who really wanted to turn this thing around. So I said, all right, we're not lifting after school anymore. We're going to lift at 5 a.m. before school. So you want to be a part of the team, you're going to get your butt out of bed, and you're going to make it to school by 5 a.m. to lift. And I'll tell you, we had 40 to 50 kids every day in that weight room at 5 a.m. So that part for us, you know, and then we went into what we had in 11-2 season this year. So, you know, you got to get the commitment from the kids. But at the same time, there's a lot of things that go into the mental aspect that we do. I push them extremely hard during workouts, and I make them fight through being uncomfortable, you know, in workouts, and I make it something that they're used to. And it's something that we do on a daily basis. We do it in practice, in certain ways. I get a sports psychologist to come in and work with the kids, you know, that talks to them about, you know, how to mentally prepare for a game and what music you should listen to leading up to a game. And, you know, 3 hours before the game, you shouldn't be listening to the hardcore, bang your head against the wall stuff, because you're going to burn yourself out. Like, you should be listening to classic music and Beethoven and that stuff to kind of relax yourself. And then that last 5-10 minutes before you're ready to go perform is when you kick stuff into high gear. So it's all little things like that that we try and teach our kids on how to deal with things. And then hopefully they take them and kind of make them their own and get into their own little routine. But you definitely see kids that have their routines before games and things they like to do and drills and all that kind of stuff. So it's nice to see it.
Yeah, I had Jonathan Anderson. He's the head coach of the Florida Little League team who won the World Series this year on a show a few weeks ago. And he said exactly what you just said. He said, you know what, I practiced those kids so hard that I told them, by the time we play these games up in Williamsport, you're going to be having fun. You're not going to be stressed out, because nothing's going to be harder than the practice you just went through. So how about in the game mode? I'm going to get to the Thanksgiving Day game here in a second, because I have a bunch of questions. And my father emailed in a question for you, by the way. So I'll get to that in a second. But in the moment of the game, and, you know, where you guys play football, like you said, I mean, it's kind of the mecca of football up in the Northeast. What is it like on game day or in those pivotal moments when a kid, you're looking them in the eyes, he's your quarterback, you got a big play. What is it like to make sure they're zeroed in and focused and ready to execute instead of worrying about what a result might be?
I think, you know, with me and coaching, a lot of it goes back to relationships, and you can't do a lot of what you need to do as a coach if you don't have relationships with your kids. So in the off season, we do a lot as a staff, just outside of football, just not even to get guys around football. It's just to get them around each other. We go and we take them paintballing and we do all this other stuff outside of football, just hanging out. You know, guys come over to my house on Sunday for dinners and we don't really talk about football. We just talk. So when you have those relationships and it gets to a pressure situation, you know, it's very easy for me to pull my quarterback aside and say, listen, just take a deep breath. Like, you know what you're doing. We've practiced this 1,000 times. I've put you in this situation 1,000 times. Just go out and have fun. And when they know you have their back, regardless of what happens, you'd be amazed at what they go out and do. So it's just showing them that you're there for them, showing them that you believe in them. no matter what happens. You know what I mean? I don't put a stress on it and say, you know, you have to go out and complete this 3rd and 15 or we're going to do, you know, it's none of that. Like, hey, go out, make your reads. Nothing's there. Go make a play, kid. Like, do what you've been doing all year. So I think it's big when kids understand that they have, you have their back and they have your confidence to go just play freely. So we try and do that as much as possible with our kids.
So from a coaching staff together standpoint, what do you look for in your coaches?
Good teachers. First and foremost, you got to be able to teach, whether you're a teacher in the classroom or not, that doesn't matter. But you got to be able to teach the game. You got to be able to build relationships with kids. If you're not going to build relationships, you're not going to be on my staff. So, you know, if getting to know a kid outside of football and what he likes to do outside of football isn't your thing, and you're only about X's and O's, and then I really don't want you on my staff. I want guys that'll go the extra mile and pick a kid up or give a kid money for food when he needs it. Take a kid home, you know, whatever it might be. Every guy on my staff doesn't hesitate to do those things for kids. So as long as you're there first and foremost to give back to the kids and that kind of thing, and you're checking your ego at the door, you know, the X's and O's stuff can be taught. You know, I can teach anybody X's and O's. I can give anybody drills to go do with some kids and things like that. So you can always learn the football side of it. It's, for me, it's, you have to be a good teacher. You have to be able to build relationships and you have to be a good role model.
Man. So every team has a superstar or two. How do you work with those kids or those athletes? Are they all treated the same, or do you got to do something different with those folks?
No, they're treated the same. You can't do anything different with them. You can't, you know, they show up late, they're penalized just like everybody else. You know, we had some issues with that with some of our kids, and they found out last year and into this year that that's kind of not how I was going to operate. And, you know, you're going to be held responsible just like everybody else. You got values in your program and core beliefs in your program. And if you're not upholding them and you're not holding people accountable to them, then they're just words. So, you know, we needed a culture change big time when I got the job there, from a commitment standpoint, from an attitude standpoint, just all around. So it's kind of, it was a hard line for me. Like, the second I got the job, this is how it's going to be. You don't like it, I'll see you later. And I'll go to play with the 35 kids I have left that are going to do it the right way and buy into the culture and that kind of stuff. And we definitely had some attrition, you know, especially my first year. I definitely got rid of a lot of kids. And you know, I kind of told the administration it's going to go down before the numbers are going to go down before they go up if you want things to change. So it was just finding that core group of kids that was going to buy in and do what you asked them to do. And we ended up having a really good senior class this year that really did that all off season.
And I'd imagine you focus big time on academics, right? This is not something that any one of those kids is going to slack off. You're going to get them the help they need if they're struggling, and you put that at the top of the list.
Yeah, so I get two grade reports every week from the school on all my kids. So the first one in the beginning of the week tells me the kids that are in danger or have close to failing grades. And then the last one's kind of my eligibility one, which ones are going to be ineligible or not. But usually that first one comes out in the week and my coaches are all over it. Once I send them to them, by the end of the week, we might have one or two guys left on the list. So it's a challenge. It's something we have to stick with consistently with these kids. I mean, they're 15, 16, 17 year old kids. A lot of them don't have the discipline to stay with their schoolwork the way they should. Like, yeah, they want to go play college, but then they don't realize by the time they're a junior and they haven't done anything GPA wise, they're in a little bit of trouble. So it's us staying on them and, you know, making that and stressing that to them. And there's punishments for being on that warning list and things like that. And each position coach has their punishments for it. The kids know not to be on the list. And, you know, I tell my kids all the time, you know, high school is really not that hard. Like, if we really go back and look at what we had to do in high school, like, the work really isn't that hard. Like, you almost got to try and fail. You know what I mean? Like, you got to be lazy enough to just not do anything and let your teacher fail you. I said, if you go to your teacher, you go, you're interested, you're trying to learn, you're trying to get extra help, there's no way they're going to fail you. So it's just stressing to the kids that, you know, the other thing with kids is a lot of them don't know how to ask for help.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of kids, especially a high school football player, because, you know, look at it from a standpoint of a kid getting hurt. What do we tell them all the time? Get your ass up. You're fine. You'll be fine. Get back in. It'll go away. It'll do this. It'll do that. Well, we're not really teaching. I mean, yeah, you got to do that sometimes to certain kids in certain situations, especially my kid, my own kid. But, you know, at the same time, we're not teaching them how to ask for help. And that could be a bad example that I use, but, you know, I kind of look at it that way. Like, these kids don't know how to ask for help, or they're ashamed to ask for help because they seem weak, or, you know, they're dumb, or if they're struggling with their mental health, they don't know how to ask for help because, you know, they're weak then, and they don't know, you know, all this other stuff. So we just really try and preach to our kids that, you know, nobody gets through life without help. Like, I've had 1,000 people help me numerous different times in my life, and I still ask for help to this day. So, you know, we just try and teach them nobody gets through life without help from anybody. And it's not showing weakness. It's not a shameful thing to ask for help. And hopefully they pick up on that. And some kids do. And some kids come and say, you know, I'm having a really hard trouble in this subject or whatever it is. And we get them a tutor or we get them the help they need. But, you know, it's a job staying on top of the academics. I will say that.
It's funny you mentioned that about asking for help. I just was reading a book by Dr. Benjamin Hardy, great psychologist, and it's called Who, Not How, and it's all about asking for help, finding the people that can help you solve problems instead of saying, how do I do this? Find somebody that can do it with you or for you.
It's like you find, you know, the best bosses in business, they don't know everything about the company. They hire the best guys that know all that stuff about the company, and that's who they have work for them. And they hire the guys that know the most, and they ask for help from those guys and their input. And, you know, it's kind of how I look at coaching. Like, I don't know everything about coaching, so I try and find the best coaches I can to help me out.
For sure. All right. So here's a part I've been dying to get to, and that is the Thanksgiving Day game. So everybody from Phillipsburg, New Jersey, you can shut this thing off at this moment in time. So for those of you out there who don't know much about this football game, let me just give you a brief history here. It's been going since 1899, right? One of the longest, if not the longest, played high school rivalries in the country. It gets like 10 to 15,000, sometimes 20,000 people to the game. It's between a team in Pennsylvania and a team in New Jersey that on that day really don't like each other very much. Maybe the rest of the year too. I don't know. But yeah, I don't think so. Right. So, and for those of us who grew up there, it's really part of our history. I played in it. My father played in it. My brother, all of us at some point were involved with this football game one way or another. And it impacts you. It lasts a lifetime. You remember every down of this game the rest of your life. It's amazing. So this year, you won. It was an incredible game. You're now 14. We're sitting down here in Florida watching. We're like, what's going on? And all of a sudden you came back. But it was dramatic at the end. And here's the question from my father. So my father's kind of a trivia question every year during Thanksgiving, because in 1954, he was a lineman but a kicker as well. And Pittsburgh was undefeated, and he kicked the extra point, and they upset Pittsburgh 7-6. Then the next year, Easton was undefeated, and he went to kick the extra point, and Bob Stem, very famous up in the Lehigh Valley, blocked the extra point, and Easton ended up losing.
Oh, man.
So it's like a crazy thing. So he said, you got to ask Coach Seneca, what did he say to his kicker before he went out there to make that kick? Because I know that kicker might have been struggling throughout the year. This is like the biggest moment ever, and he goes out there and nails it.
Mm-hmm. first of all, he's a great kid. He's a soccer player that helps us out and comes over and works hard, you know, to be good for us. And extra point wise, he's phenomenal. Like he, you know, he really, I think he might have missed three, and I don't even know if all those were his fault. But the field goals, for some reason, like, I don't know if he just got in his own head or he thought he had to kick it harder or whatever it is, but he just, it wasn't happening for him with the field goals. We were 0-for-3 in the season leading into that game. And then at the end of the first half, we drove down and he had a short tip shot, almost the exact same kick he hit to win it. And he put it off the left upright and it didn't go in. So now we're 0-for-4 on the year. It was actually pretty easy what I said to him. You know, we got the ball second in overtime, so we held them from scoring. They missed the field goal. So all we had to do was get a point. Where it didn't matter, you know what I mean? It didn't matter right. How we got a point. We just needed one. So it came down to fourth down. Ball was on like the 2 or 3 yard line. So it's basically an extra point. It was just off the hash for him. So I knew we were going to kick the field goal. I called him aside. I said, all right, listen, here's the deal. They have one timeout. So they're going to let you walk out there. They're going to let you get all set up. And right before we're going to snap it, he's going to call a timeout, just so you know. I said, and the second he does that, grab your tee, come over here on the sideline, get some more kicks in, make sure you're loose. And I said, and then the bottom line is this, kid, we don't lose this game on this kick. You miss it, we keep playing. So it doesn't really matter to me. I said, we're going to beat them no matter what in overtime. So you want to be a hero, go make the kick. If not, we'll win it later for you. So, you know, so we went out. They called the timeout. Just like you said, he ran over, got some kicks in. I didn't say another word to him then. I kind of walked to the other end of the field. I'd be by myself for that one. And yeah, man, he nailed it right through the middle.
That it was awesome. And I try to explain people what that game is like. One year, I invited a lot of coworkers, friends, people from the neighborhood on Thanksgiving morning to come. It was on ESPN that year, and yeah. I invited them over, and they're like, "What? You want us to come to your house 10:30 on Thanksgiving to watch a high school football game between two schools? You know, we don't even know." I'm like, "Yeah, you don't get it. You're going to watch this thing. It's going to blow your mind." And it did. It was a great game, and it was a great atmosphere. But it's a tremendous thing, and what an honor to be able to coach and win the game. So congratulations there. Just to wrap things up, just a couple more questions. What advice would you give to a young student athlete who is aspiring to go play, you know, big time football like you did, and maybe have a career beyond that? You know, what should they be doing right now?
Play multiple sports. Yeah, I mean, it's the first thing I can tell you. I don't know why these parents keep having their kids specialize at 10, 11, 12 and are just playing one sport. Like, I think the best thing my dad ever did for me was make me play soccer, you know, my hand eye coordination and all that kind of stuff. And my footwork and, you know, that all got better playing soccer and playing a different sport. So, you know, I was 1,000-point scorer in basketball. It's different movements for your body. You know, not just the agility part of it, but the strength part of it. You're using different muscles in different ways, and they strengthen them more than just your average lifts do. So that's the first thing I'd say is play multiple sports and be as involved in as many as you can. Lacrosse is a great sport. Basketball, wrestling's phenomenal. You know what I mean? For that mental toughness and that, you know, fighting through adversity type thing. And then the next thing's your academics. You know, that was one thing my dad was really hard on me for was my academics. And he said, you can get an A, you can get a B. He goes, anything else than that, you lose sports. And I'm going to take them away from you. So, you know, I did whatever I had to do to make sure I had an A and a B. I never got a C my entire life. So that's how important sports were to me though. You know, I'm kind of the same way with my kid. He has the same rule, A's and B's. Like, it's not that hard. Pay attention in class, do your work, study for a test, and you're going to be fine. And again, ask for help if you need it. And then the third thing, you know, you get to workouts, and it's don't ever be satisfied. You know, there's how many kids out in the United States, and there's 85 scholarships on a team in football. even less on basketball, even less in every other sport. So what are you going to do to make yourself stand out from them that day? What are you going to do that's going to take you that extra step? Are you going to do the extra two reps? Or are you going to cut it short by one? You know what I mean? Are you going to cut the line short, or are you going to hit the line? You know, those are all little things we stress to our team. I'll repeat conditioning 1,000 times until they do it right and to the expectation that I want it done. And we're going and touching, everybody's touching the line and all doing all that stuff. So it's really being self-disciplined enough to eat right, to train right, to do the little extra things, to say no to a party because you have to get up early in the morning and train and you would rather get a good night's sleep. You know, it's some of that stuff tough. Like, you're going to miss stuff. I don't know how many things I missed to go to a camp or go out to California to work with somebody to throw, or, you know, you miss some things, but you're going to have to be okay with it if that's what you really want. So, and then the last thing is, man, if you're not having fun, I don't know why you're doing it. I really don't know why you're doing it. I tell my kids all the time, like, when we have a bad practice or it looks like they don't want to be there, I'm like, no, nobody's forcing you to be here. Nobody said you have to go play football and you're going to go to jail if you don't. Like, nobody's forcing you to be here. This is not a game where that if you don't love it and you're not having fun, this is not a game to be around. Like, there's way too much work that goes into it to get success out of it, that if you're not loving it and you're not having fun, like, find something else, man. And that's true with any sport. Like, if you show up to the gym to shoot 100 shots and you're like, man, this is torture, or if you're like, nah, I just shot my 100, I'm good, let me shoot another 50. You know what I mean? That's the mentality you need. But if you're struggling to get through it, like, maybe you just need to rethink things. I mean, I'm just being honest here. Like, yeah. And I say the same thing to my kid. Like, you don't want to go to workouts and you don't want to be good. Like, I don't know what you want me to tell you. Like, success is hard work. You know what I mean? So there's no shortcut to it. There's never been a shortcut to it. There's not going to be a shortcut to it. You know what I mean? Success is hard work. So you just got to be ready to handle that.
Yeah, you're spot on. If nobody believes you, they should read Tim Grover's book, The Trainer for Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. Yep. Those things will blow your mind, the commitment they had and the work they had. Yeah.
You look at the stories about Jordan, and he kept losing to the Pistons and the Bad Boys and all that stuff. And then he finally said, I'm getting beat up too much. I need to lift. So he went in the offseason and he put on, what'd they say, like 20 or 25 pounds of muscle just to be able to handle that stuff. So, you know, to be able to do that in one offseason is not easy. Like, you got to go in determined. And I mean, you talk about Kobe, you talk about Michael, like those mindsets are different. Like, that's a different breed right there. Like, if you can emulate some of that, you know, I think you'd be pretty damn good. If you can do what they do and have the mentality that they have, like, Kobe was a straight killer. Mm-hmm. Kobe, I mean, he was a stone cold killer. And the same thing with Jordan at the end of a game. Like, you didn't want the ball in his hands at the end of the game. Like, you knew he was going to take over. So that mentality is a different mentality right there.
Yeah, absolutely. I reread the book several times trying to keep up understanding it all. It's unbelievable. All right, well, the last thing I got for you is what does your future look like? I know you're focused on Easton football and winning championships. So what are you going to do the next few months to do that?
Well, get through the holidays with my family and enjoy those first and foremost. And then, like I said, back in the weight room starting the beginning of January. So it'll be a stretch. We'll be back in at 5 a.m. probably again. And some early cold mornings with the kids, and then in the spring ball and in our 7-on-7 tour in the summer, and then right back at it in August, more Friday nights.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing a lot more Easton football, a lot more wins, and we really appreciate your time, Matt, and your insight that you provided. Hey, make sure you check out chargeforwardcoaching.com. There's a lot more episodes, a lot more good information, a lot more on mental toughness that you can learn. And just remember to keep charging forward.